Tom, I would recommend at this end, we have all the folks that we can get in for now. So if you want to proceed with the afternoon session, let's do it.
Great. We are reconvening right now. We are going to agenda item 6, fire season readiness, where the department will provide an update to the board on the 2020 fire season readiness. This is an informational item, and the main presenter is Doug Graff. So I'll turn over to Doug, and he can introduce whoever else is going to be involved as he goes through this item. So, Doug, you there and ready to go?
I am. Thank you, Chair Amundson, members of the board, State Forest Authority. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as Chief of Fire Protection for the Department of Forestry. I'll hand this over once again to Ron Graham, Deputy Chief Fire Protection, to walk us through the outlook for 2020 fire season. A few stats relative to activity to date. The main theme will be, of course, COVID-19 fire season readiness, the work we've done and efforted towards there to be ready for fire season, and close with some resource readiness. With that, Ron, if you could take it away, thanks.
Good afternoon, Chair Imason, members of the board, State Forest Authority. Once again, for the record, my name is Ron Graham, and I serve as the Deputy Chief for the Fire Protection Division. Go ahead, Jason. Okay, we're going to get right into the presentation, and as far as our fire season outlook, we'll start with our drought outlook and monitor. This data is released as of the 28th of May, and it's actually from the 26th of May. And what it shows is that drought continues to persist in the state, throughout most of the state. We've had a little bit of a reprieve lately with some rainfall. Not enough to really turn the drought around, but at least slow it down a bit. It does continue to persist. What this represents is about 13% of the state is abnormally dry, 44% of the state is in moderate drought, and 31% of the state's in severe drought, with a little bit over 7%, that dark red areas, now in extreme drought. So again, really the only area that you see kind of excluded right now is a little spot up in northeast Oregon. So we continue to build and persist with drought, not as severe perhaps clearly as like 2015, but this is quite a concern to us. And you see with the lower graphic on the left-hand side also that a good portion of the West is experiencing that. We're always watching what is going on in our neighboring states as far as, you know, potential impacts to their fire activity and on resource draw. Go ahead. Temperature outlook remains pretty static from the last time this was released. There continues to be a greater than average chance of seeing above normal temperatures. So as you look at this map, the darker red in color with the A that builds up from the southwest, from Texas through the southwest into the northwest, that's showing an above average chance to see above normal temperatures. You see that middle part of the country pretty normal. The rest of the country all in that somewhat above their normal chances. That's another area of concern that we watch is, you know, are we going to be warmer than normal potentially? This would indicate yes. Go ahead, next slide. Precipitation outlook. This is one area where this has changed with the recent release here, just in the beginning of June, end of May. Prior to this, the precipitation outlook, at least through June and July and August, was showing, you know, some below normal chances, greater chances of below normal, and that continues to be the case. The Climate Prediction Center just released that potentially June itself would have a chance of above normal, slightly above normal precipitation. We'll watch that closely. I think the weather pattern that we're in right now kind of indicates that, you know, there's potential systems moving through on a somewhat regular basis. How much of that we will see throughout the month of June is yet to be determined. But they've backed off on this, how far and how deep the below normal chances of precipitation will be for June. Next slide. And then moving into the significant wildfire potential. What we continue to see is down in very south central, southwest Oregon, we have elevated chance for significant fire potential starting in June. As it progresses through July, it moves upward and onward throughout the state. And then in August, we see it has pretty much all of the state, but the far northwest corner. The newest release also shows that consistent for September. So we'll continue to watch that. Again, as I pointed out, we look at the entire country and looking at specifically the July timeframe, July, August, you can see a good portion of the West having that above normal chances for significant wildfire potential. So we'll continue to monitor resource availability and our other state and federal partners' activity levels. Go ahead with the next slide, please. Some fire statistics to date, as of June 1st of this year, what we are seeing is that 96% of our fires we've been able to keep at 10 acres or less, so just below our 98% key performance measure I mentioned earlier this morning. And then you can see where we're at right now with 178 total fires as of June 1st, a majority of those human caused. We have seen a little bit of lightning fires with the last couple of storms, even though those storms have been primarily wet. We've picked up lightning fires in Klamath and Coos and in Central Oregon. Also, you can see that lightning fires have not contributed very significantly to our acres burned so far. Most of those have been single tree kind of fires due to the wet environment and the nature of the wet storms. Again, majority of our acres are coming from human-caused activity, and I'll expand on that a little bit later. So 187 acres burned year-to-date puts us well below the 10-year average, while the number of fires continues to be above the 10-year average. That's pretty consistent across the region with federal partners and all ownership as well. Across the region right now, it's particularly in Oregon right now, total of 3,000 acres burned approximately. That includes our federal partners across the state as well. Next slide, please. So as we've highlighted before, you know, one of the trends that we're watching and we're seeing and experiencing is that on ODF protected lands, the number of acres burned continues to rise each decade. And we see that starting with the 90s, considerable increase into the early 2000s, and then from, you know, 2010 on, considerable increase again. This is what we've experienced in recent years. We've averaged about the same amount of fires, although, you know, we might be up slightly above average on a given year. The acres burned continues to, on the average, increase for us. Next slide. A similar story when we look across all acreage, all ownerships in the state. So this is state land, federal land, you know, Forest Service, BLM, BIA included. And you can see the same trend is happening with the number of acres burned. Our number of acres burned on ODF protected lands is in, you know, the 40,000 range, that kind of thing. And here you see numbers in the hundreds of thousands range. So while we're experiencing that increase of, you know, number of acres burned, the longer duration of fire seasons, complex fires on our ownership and in protection, our federal partners are seeing that at a, you know, similarly increased level. And we've experienced that with the amount of fires that are on federal jurisdiction that either involve ODF protected lands or threaten ODF protected lands. So again, just another factor in, you know, resource draw in any given fire season and what the fire seasons end up doing for our resources with cumulative fatigue as we progress throughout the year. Next slide, please. This slide really, really tells the story financially really well. You know, you're all aware of where we are with our financial picture. You heard a lot of that this morning. You can see from 2006 to 2012, we averaged a gross $9.7 million fire season. That's what we were built for financially. It worked really well. And then you see the drastic shift starting in 2013, where our average gross costs from 2013 through last year averaged $70 million. Again, it's really problematic. And I think, you know, we're all more aware of the conditions that we have, the structure financially that is built, and the challenges that it poses for the Fire Protection Division and the agency as a whole. Next slide, please. So as Doug highlighted, a large portion of what we've been doing right now has focused around getting ready for fire season, particularly in light of the COVID-19 pandemic. Early in March, Chief Doug Graff and others directed myself and other staff from the Protection Division and throughout the agency to come up with some plans. How are we going to mitigate COVID-19 this fire season and ensure that we don't have, you know, large outbreak of COVID-19 in our fire camps, et cetera. So we started working in March on some preparedness measures. There's some national direction that we followed from the National Multi-Agency Coordinating Group and National Wildfire Coordinating Group that had some broad perspectives working across the geographic areas to develop some frameworks led by area command incident management teams to give us, you know, some general kind of strategies and framework to mitigate COVID-19. But that was fairly early on in the efforts. So one of the things we realized as an agency is we needed to break this down a little bit and what were we going to do in terms of our readiness and preparedness efforts, what we would do for initial attack, and how we would mitigate COVID-19 in extended attack situations and support our incident management teams. So on the preparedness side, a couple of things we did is followed national guidance and adjusted our training requirements. National guidance allowed us to recognize people's certifications, qualifications, training, and experience from last year, as long as those were current, and continue them into this year. That way we would only require the full-blown training and fitness training for our new firefighters and limit exposure to that part of training. We also canceled and rescheduled a lot of our training programs, including, as I mentioned this morning, our incident management team training was canceled, but our teams got to exercise some real life training in a very challenging environment supporting the Emergency Coordination Center here for the state. But our fire schools, we've been delivering in a modified format. Our Department of Corrections training for adults in custody, we've delivered with smaller classroom sizes to ensure social distancing. And we've included opportunities to do online training. While we're not requiring the wildland fire refresher that normal is required annually for our returning firefighters, we have that option for people to take and complete that training in an online setting to refresh themselves. The other things we've been doing as far as readiness and preparedness, I'll touch on briefly and then a little bit later on, is around wildfire prevention and public information. Early this March, April, May, we are trending towards an increase in human-caused fires, particularly in Southwest Oregon, a lot of backyard debris burning fires that were escaping. So preventatively, the Southwest Oregon District entered fire season on May 1st, one of the earliest since the 60s. And then the U.S. Forest Service suspended their prescribed burning program. And Oregon Department of Forestry, State Fire Marshal's Office, Oregon Health Authority, DEQ, and other state partners combined to ask for a voluntary stay of public burning. And we had great compliance with that. Mother Nature helped out. It wasn't the greatest conditions for spring burning. What we didn't want to do was put in a bunch of additional smoke in the air, not knowing how that might impact sensitive populations in terms of COVID. We certainly know how it impacts smoke-sensitive populations, so we didn't want to contribute to that. So about that time, our area command teams finished the geographic area plan for Washington and Oregon for all agencies. We took that framework. We made a similar plan for the state of Oregon itself. And again, a somewhat of a high-level strategy, some best management practices to inform our field units to go ahead and create local plans, as well as we asked our incident management team command and general staff to complete an incident management team plan and how our teams would consistently respond and mitigate COVID-19. Shortly after that, the Pacific Northwest incident management teams did the same. They invited our incident management team initial our incident commanders and command and general staff to participate in that effort to ensure as much, you know, alignment and consistency across the two states and through the different teams as we could. There are certainly differences in the way that we administer our fire camps and our partnerships with our local partners, landowners, Department of Corrections, et cetera, that really required us to have a plan specific to ODF. So we're dealing with multiple plans. We've been communicating this out to the field, working with our partners, contract community, working with landowners and stakeholders, primarily through OFIC. And the final piece of this is Chief Doug Graff and Mariana Ruiz Temple, Chief Deputy Fire Marshal from OSFM, commissioned a fire camp COVID committee to further look at how exactly we will deal with situations in fire camp when we have potentially exposed people, or, you know, people who think they might have COVID-19 symptoms, and, you know, how we will track, trace, identify, isolate, and deal with any quarantine issues. And so we're working closely with Oregon Health Authority on that, as well as reaching out to OROSHA to close out that effort. We continue to monitor lessons learned nationally from other areas where they've seen fire activity already, as well as our own initial attack efforts and, you know, what's working, what's not working. These are all living documents for us, these plans. So we'll continue to update them as things progress. Next slide, please. So part of our fire season readiness, as usual, is our severity or special purpose appropriation program, getting all of our aviation contracts in place for the year. We have all of those contracts in place. We have our plan in place. We'll see similar distribution of our resources across the state as we have in the past. Last year, we added a medium helicopter for the Northwest Oregon area. If you reflect back to that slide where I showed the significant wildfire potential last year, Northwest Oregon area was showing some early significant fire potential. We saw some fires in March last year in that area. That is not the case for that area this year, so we've not added that helicopter resource back that was based in Salem for that. So it's kind of our recent status quo, combination of a large air tanker, five single engine air tankers, the couple of light fixed wing aircraft for detection, the medium helicopters, and the heli-attack, as well as the hand crew based out of Grants Pass. So we continue with those resources. Typically, we would see those resources coming on late June, early July, as well as district aviation resources through their local contracts as well. Next slide, please. So kind of a great success story. This is a lot of credit due to KOG and Chris Babs leading this effort, working with all of the partners. You see the logos represented there. May was Wildfire Awareness Month across the country. And as I mentioned before, you know, we took a lot of preventative measures, trying to really slow that increase of human caused fires down. Chris Babs created the theme this year for Oregon, Oregon Our Oregon, and worked with some pretty significant folks. Her success getting the Smokey Bear license plate and the revenue that's been generated from that to help assist KOG and all the partnerships you've seen here led to some great work. And I just wanted to highlight a little sound clip, if I could, from one of the partnerships that Chris was able to reach out and get to do this campaign.
Oregon, this is our home. From its wide Pacific shore to its majestic peaks and open desert, this state has it all. But one careless spark could take all of this away. Whether you're at home, at play, or on the job, the power and responsibility of wildfire is in your hands. Please, keep Oregon green.
So great work by, again, Chris Babs, and I think that voice needs no introduction. It's actually part of a PSA and series of campaigns You can go on the KOG website and look at the videos itself. I just wanted to play that audio clip for you because Chris has been trying for a couple of years to get Mr. Sam Elliott on board with that and was able to meet up with him early this spring and get that work done. So real great job. That's going to make a huge impact and reach out to a lot of people with a very notable voice there. Next slide, please. All right, some other key components to what we're doing to get ready for fire season and great initiatives. We've introduced our strategic investments to you a couple times before. These are funded through the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, landowner dollars. In years where the large fire funding cap has not been reached, and there's been significant investments made. We've talked about this forward-looking infrared and mapping system being added to our Partenavia observer aircraft, and that project is nearing completion. It will be ready for this fire season. It has seen a little bit of a delay due to COVID-19. Working with some of the contract companies doing some of the work, we've had to mitigate some of those delays and continue to get that work done. Our aviation staff has done an excellent job doing that. The project is on schedule. They've got most of the equipment mounted and they're doing testing. And if you remember, what this will do is give us the capability not only of utilizing the forward-looking red infrared, but enhancing that with night vision capability. We can use this daytime, nighttime, and look for fire starts, some very small, down to campfire size. And this is technology we've used in the past throughout the last couple of years, primarily through contract resources that are in high demand, as well as reaching out to our partners in Colorado who has an aircraft, multi-mission aircraft, but again, in high demand. We're not always able to get those resources available to us when we most need them. Now we'll have that capability for ourselves. And you can see some of the visions of what it looks like trying to see through the smoke columns versus looking at it through infrared technology. You can clearly see where the hot spots are. So we continue to expand on those as well as building out the camera detection system and the radio network that's required to run that, as well as a couple projects for guard stations that give us the ability to staff remote locations where it's oftentimes hard to recruit and retain staff. So we continue to build out those. These are all part of the first round of strategic investment proposals that we've seen. And there's potentially, as we go through the rest of June here, the second opportunity since this program has been available that there might be funding, again, with landowner dollars to actually support some continued investments and projects throughout the state. So the next time we report out, we'll give you an update on that. Next slide, please. In closing, I just need to thank all of our partners in the complete and coordinated system. You know, as we face this fire season, if you look back at the weather and the potential that it gave you, we're all going into it right now and we're anticipating the potential for a slightly more than average fire season. So that's what we're preparing for. We've been able to secure the funding from the e-board last month to cover the cost of that severity program for last year and this year, as well as the e-board released some funding that was in our biennial budget to help us with the increased severity of the fire season and actually expanded the support and use of those funds to help us prepare for COVID mitigation. So we've been able to buy personal protective equipment, cloth masks, KN95 masks, cleaning and disinfecting products for our districts, for our offices, to support our incident management teams, as well as any and all of the partners listed on this slide that would show up on an ODF incident. Where we're going to support them in a, you know, non-traditional fire camp setting. So we've got that PPE ordered. Much of it's arriving and being distributed out to our field right now. Some of it came at, you know, very low cost through Department of Corrections and South Forks and Oregon Correctional Enterprises, as well as through the ORS Council and the Emergency Coordination Center in DAS, where the state warehouse was helping supply agencies and counties with personal protective equipment and supplies to mitigate COVID-19. With that, I will stop and turn it back over to Doug Graff to close.
Thank you, Ron, for that report. Chair Imason to the board, that is the end of our report. You may recall we joined throughout the summer to provide a status for fire season. We typically run through September. We've been known to go later. Hopefully that's not the case, and we've also been known to only have a fire update, then canceled all other items if we get into that type of environment, and hopefully we don't enter any one of those environments and we just see it up and through September for more typical fire season updates. With that, we take any questions.
Brendan McComb has a question, I think.
Thanks for that update, Ron and Doug. I was just curious, though, given the COVID situation, how is the prescribed burning program going? Are you able to continue to burn, or has that been scaled back?
Yeah, I'd be happy to answer that, and thank you for that question. You know, as I mentioned, the U.S. Forest Service, they actually suspended their prescribed burning this spring, pretty much nationally, especially here in the Northwest, but as an agency, they chose to suspend much of their prescribed burning. We asked for a voluntary, suspension of prescribed burning for private landowners and all landowners. There were still some, obviously, some prescribed burns that did take place. We tried to avoid any of those in really smoke-sensitive areas and populations that could be at risk. So while we did that, as I mentioned also, the weather definitely played into that as well, and there wasn't the most favorable conditions for prescribed burning this spring. So all in all, I think it, you know, worked out really well.
Okay, I don't see any other hands up, so thanks very much, you guys. And